Okay, certainly speaking as a butch. Would.
It's a real interesting kind of thing to think about. Okay, we're getting on to other groups. University Lesbians, Old School Dykes. What else did you see as big divisions in the community? You said there were class differences. What does that mean?
Well, now that I'm a professional.
Okay.
I think some people took their being professional too seriously. I mean, because somebody had a degree or had a job at wherever and made X amount of foul. You know, it was... I think some people just had an attitude, you know, about being a professional. Then there was...
Did you notice that when you first came out into the community? Or when you first entered the white community?
No, because the only people I saw at first was university people.
Oh, you came out when... Oh, I see. Uh-huh. What were those bars that you can recall when you first came out into what was predominantly white community? When you first started really hanging out, not just those first like trips to the 132 Club.
The first bar I went to, I think, was the bar. Because it wasn't. I don't think university people had started going there. Me and who? Me and this was a whole other bunch of people that I had never seen before. Yeah. And then people from the college started coming. These people were younger, you know, and the younger, spiffy, dressier, you know, kind of, I work in an office downtown type.
Oh, yeah, okay, I see what you mean. I'm trying to remember what they looked like, what those groups of people looked like.
Clean, scrubbed, you know, no jeans.
Hairspray.
Yeah.
A lot of hairspray. But the university dogs look different from that.
Grunge.
God.
The creeping crud. I think it. Every time you saw him, you wanted to give him some brown soap and a stiff brush. I'm serious. Some of those meetings I used to go to, I could not breathe. God. Even though Mother Nature was clean. Jesus Christ.
Okay. Professionals. These are, you said, office workers downtown.
Well, and, you know,
they weren't people with university degrees.
Well, I don't know what they were. They just had an attitude. And they was middle class attitudes, even though they might not have had any money.
Oh, I see.
Or any kind of prestigious job. Every time I think about professional, I was talking about this today with somebody. I think about Roxanne Bush.
Yes.
You know, she's, oh, I'm a professional. If I saw you on the street and I was with some of my colleagues, I wouldn't speak to you. But then she always wanted to hang out. You know what I mean? I mean, that kind of attitude. Then I came to realize that it wasn't that she was such a professional, it was that she was probably paranoid because she was a dyke. You know, it was, and I always, I mean, I've never been in awe of somebody who had a profession. That's fine if you're gonna do what you like to do, you know, because I am a professional. And I have some letters after my name.
And feel different?
I feel different than I got a job, let me tell you. I got some money.
Yeah.
But, so what? What a professional means to me is that I have a degree and I know a whole lot of theory and now I'm getting a whole lot of practice and I do my job well. And I can deliver. But in terms of how I relate to people, so I'm a professional, so what? I'm just a person. You know, but I think, well, how I saw it, some people were middle class, okay, to begin with, and you just could not talk to them because they didn't know what you were saying, and you didn't know what they were saying, and after a while you didn't give a shit. You know, after you said, hi, how are you, then you know there's nothing else to talk about, you know? There's a lot of those around. But it was, for me, it was easy to pick those folks out and just kind of make them invisible.
Mm-hmm.
Then it was just regular people. People that home is where you come from. I mean, I believe that. It's one person that I met and right away got along with, and we've been fast friends since then, is Mary Bush. Because Mary, she was part of that university. But she came from a different place. She came from a farm. She was strictly working class. She had no illusions, you know. And we just started hanging out. And it was, I mean, it's like some things I did not have to explain to her, you know, about my life. And whereas some other people, surely wouldn't, they just had no idea of how the other half lived. You know, it's not my purpose in life to educate those people.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly would never be friends with them.
But some of the women that you went with after that time were part of that university group, or maybe came from middle class.
Were they ever?
How did you feel?
That's why I'm not
in those relationships.
Oh God! The lovely maid Mary. So middle class, I cannot believe. I mean, I'm so glad I went with her because it was really an experience. I mean, she was just, I mean, she's telling about her life when she was a kid. We lived in California and she went away to a boarding school in Arizona and stuff. While there was an airline pilot, she had been all over. And one time she went away and I used to go and get a mailbox, get all the dividend checks from AT&T and Shell and all this stuff. And just brought all this dough, right? But she tried to be poor. You know, I mean, she tried to be. I couldn't understand. I heard politics probably telling me that she shouldn't have this money, so she should be poor.
She gave it away?
Kidding.
I'm sorry.
But I mean, just in how we related. I mean, most of the time we were together. Maybe like 9 months, and I think 8 months out of which she cried because she just did not know some basics about life because she just came from a whole different place and how she saw the world. Even though she was trying to be political. You know, how she saw the world was just, it was like that's why I call her Maid Marian, because it was like a fairy tale. It wasn't the real world, you know, and it was,
When did you go with the book? What year?
The first day at school, so that. This is 72.
Yeah.
72.
Me it was, because that march in Albany was 71 in the spring.
Yes, over.
About a year later.
Yeah.
We're trying to get the chronology of when things happen. It's really hard. People's memories, you know, melt 2 years into each other.
Yeah.
So you started, that means that you started hanging out around Missoula about a year, between 1 and 2 years before that, around 70, 71. Well, 70 maybe.
I think I was still working, so it had to be. Maybe 70.
Okay. So, actually, your experience in like a white community is closer to 70 years old. I thought it would have been a little bit more. And the further back you go, the mushier it gets.
Yeah.
You know. When did you finally decide that it was important for you to get a job or be a professional or do something with your life? You said for like the first couple of years after high school you just sort of hung out and you didn't work, right? When did you get your first job then?
Oh, this was 20. Well, my first job. My first job was, my mother used to work for these Jewish people, right? And their friend next door needed somebody to clean their house, so they recruited me. So I bopped over there. So I think I did that for a while. Clean this lady's house.
Oh, that was, you were out of high school right
then? Yeah. I think I was 19 or 20.
So that's like 62, 63?
60.
Okay. Is that steady?
I worked with someone a couple times. It was probably a year or some months between each time. Because then I started working, my cousin got me a job in the laundry.
Okay.
And then, like, I worked ever since then. I worked in some laundries, then I worked in a lot of factories.
Paper
Tubes is the name of the place. Paper Tubes Inc. They made these big tubes that they shipped shells into Vietnam. They were like this big. And you go there Monday morning, punching at 8 and 8:01, you would like cover it with this black tar dust because they wrap paper around these cardboard tubes. And they wrapped it with tar, so they had these big tar pots cooking all day. They would catch on fire, and you would look down the hallway and see these big clouds of black smoke billowing through. They never let us go outside and get some air. So when I was working on the assembly line, I said to myself, Joan, this is not it. I got to. But
you were there 4 years, though.
4 years. 4 years off, and I was laid off a lot.
Uh-huh.
And so that's when I was still at. During that time, I come back here on the and she used to tell me I should go to school. So I never even thought about, well, in some abstract way, I thought about going back to school, but never seriously. First of all, because I didn't know what I would take.
Yeah.
And then after I started doing yoga.
Really?
Yeah.
While you were working at this factory?
No, after I got laid off.
Mm-hmm. What year was that?
That was 7 years. That was after I worked. That was the last time I worked, right? I was with Marion then.
Huh.
And I was thinking, because I had a year off. I was thinking about going to school. And then I wasn't working, and then I was kind of still smoking, but I was like not doing anything, so I wasn't getting exercise. And I started doing yoga, and then I just started being interested in bodies and functions and all that stuff. And so that's how I got interested in, well, it was kind of bad because I got interested in like research, but I don't want to be in school for the next 20 years trying to be a doctor. So the next choice to work in a lab was to be a mentor. But when I was working, I knew that I should be doing something else with my head, you know, because like I've always, that's strange, because my mother and father, I've never seen them read anything except the newspaper. Never seen them like sit down and read a book, but I've always read from like grammar school. I read every book in the library, and I read all the books in the local library. And I've always read, so like I always knew a lot of things, you know. And I always had one friend in particular that the reason I liked her, because she could talk about something besides local gossip. You know, you see somebody say, so who did this? And then after that, they don't know, there's nothing to talk about. They don't even know what's on the front page of the paper. You know, so I always need some intellectual stimulation, you know. And so I knew at some point I was going to do something. Discover what's going to be like.
Mm-hmm.
So that was right when I got on the walk. Because I didn't want to go back to work. I want to make some money because I want to get in the EOP program, right?
Right.
So you have to make like minimal. So I didn't want to work that year.
Yeah.
So I get in the next year. I found out every factory in Buffalo was, because they sent me to every factory trying to get me a job. So I did no work trying not to get a job. I had to pretend I couldn't see, I couldn't hear, you know, and I would act dumb. And
did you ever tell anybody you were gay?
No.
For not getting a job?
No. The two times I got a job, they thought I was a guy. One guy said, all you need is job so you can support your family. Then I realized, first I panicked because I said, oh God, I got a job, you know. Then when he said that, I realized why I got a job. I said, wait, wait, wait. And it was so weird. He was so weird, so embarrassed. I just looked at him. I just looked at him and said, you know, I'm not a man. I spent like the next half hour trying to explain.
Well, you couldn't get the job. Did you
No. Give
the job anyway?
No, no. Because it was for a guy who was like on the road back or some shit. So, now he's been trying to tell me why he thought I was a guy. I didn't care. I didn't get the job.
Well, what was it like being gay working in your family? Did it make a difference? Were there other gay people there?
When I first went to that, my last job, it was, I think, all the black bags and local workers. And I came in like on the tail end. It was, because when I first went there, I was working two jobs, and then I went to put my laundry job, I was in the show, I was in the moon and the mirror, so.
This is paper trips.
Yeah,
yeah.
So I worked second shift and on that shift. There was three other studs, and their women were there. Then, yeah, like I was all alone. And I went on days. Like they cut off my chip, I went on days. But it was no problem.
Were the workers at the factory predominantly black?
No. It was only there's only two white women there. A woman and her mother.
Huh. Where was the factory?
It was first on Niagara and West Ferry. And then it moved on north and then between Brighton and Fillmore.
Tell me about your relationships. You didn't talk much about the 5-year relationship. Was that your first, long one?
That was the longest one. I didn't talk about it then, probably because my heart was still broken.
Last spring? When did it break up, the relationship? Who's that?
A dog.
Oh, Jesus, yes. You want me to take that off the table? I will.
Yeah, I never...
That's because we never saw you. That's why it's so funny to remember that.
But whenever I talk about it, I never mention your name.
Yeah.
And I never really talked about it because at that time, it was too much hurt and pain. That's why I didn't really.
You didn't live together
here in the relationship,
did you?
I mean, we didn't live together.
Yeah.
But
you spent a lot of time.
Most of the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was also a child involved in the relationship.
Yeah.
Was that good for you, bad for you, neither? Did you get anyone? Was it a little girl?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't want to talk about that.
Okay. When that broke up, and after the initial, shock of that kind of thing, yeah, because I haven't been there. What were your thoughts about further relationships? In the beginning, some people think that they either need another one immediately or they're never going to have another one again. You know, you do it in the extreme, but when you were more practical about it.
Well, we were breaking up. We were breaking up like this in April to November. And also, that was my last year in school, and it was senior year. You have a semester of classes and a semester of hospital rotation. So, my first semester was classes, and I was taking chemistry, microbiology, hematology, pathology. Seminar. I had labs every day. So I had to study for all these tests. Of course I had to study these tests because it was a choice of being heartbroken and being a med tech. Of course I was going to be a med tech. You know, because how I approached school always from day one was, this is my last chance and I got to do something with my life right now. So I couldn't devote the time that I should have to the relationship because I had to study. So I'm sure that kind of helped. So it was like I was trying to see her, trying to study, and just in a I mean, when I thought about it afterwards, rationally, when I was, you know, had cooled out a little, I was crazy. You know, I couldn't sleep. I, like, lost 10 pounds. You know, my pants were hanging on my ass. And it was... Well, I knew what I wanted to do with her, but I didn't have time. Right then, I didn't have time, and I used to say, God, she just wait one more month, right? One more month, when I was, that semester, not school would be over, but that semester would be over, you know, and then I, because I didn't have to study. In January, I did my hospital rotations. It was just like a job. I went there, it was like 9-5, came home. The first 2 weeks, I didn't know what to do. I came home and ate dinner, I didn't have to study, and I just sat there for like 2 hours, because I didn't know what to do. I mean, I was a studier. I mean, I would come home and eat, go up to my room, and just study. Like, maybe 3 or 4 hours, come down and get some tea, go back up and study. Study like 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning, and try to go to bed, couldn't sleep, get up and go to school and just... So, I thought if she could have waited, we could have, the relationship could have lasted. Because I had a whole lot of insight about all the fucked up things that I had done in a relationship. And also, fucked up things she let happen. You know, that was one big thing that I assumed all the blame. Which was, I mean, I wasn't in this relationship in the vacuum. You know. And at some point, one of my friends who counseled me through these times, you know, said, look, you know, she was there, she let this happen with her. And then after I realized that, I really thought that we could make it if she could have waited, she couldn't wait. So, how I felt, I had all these feelings now, right? So, first thing, I wanted to rush out and meet somebody and be in love. But I've never been able to do that because I've never been, I mean, I was with her like 2 years before I figured out I must love this person. I mean, seriously, guy. You know, it was like,